Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, I wish I was still sleeping, but happy to be with all of you here. Absolutely thrilled. I'm Ken Napsok. This is Four Center, by the way.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are coming directly to you from a state of deep exhaustion at one side of our hotel room. Beautiful, great, wonderful exhaustion. We've been having a great time at Star Wars Celebration, doing a lot of celebrating, getting to a lot of panels. Not getting to other panels because there's too much to do. We had our stand-up show last night. Thank you, everyone who came out to that. It was an absolutely wonderful time. But I think we expended some energy. I think in the parlance of role-playing games, we've lost several hit points.
Yeah, and as you're speaking, I'm yawning, but it's a good earned yawn. It's a good earned time. And this is what you want. We're here at the recording on the final day of the convention, and we're going to actually, after this, do a final floor walk and all that kind of good stuff and start saying goodbye to people. And you put a tweet out today, Joseph, about bittersweet. It is always bittersweet. There's a little, when you check in, there's so much excitement, but you're always kind of like, oh, man, eventually I'll get home and we'll get back to life being normal. And then you kind of are like, I don't want that to happen. I don't want right. that to happen. So that's where we're at. But yes, I want to say thanks to everyone who came out last night, too. So many wonderful people to meet so many people from Discord. Mark Canoop, we keep joking with him. He did teach us how to say it right. We might have just been too drunk. Ilka, Andrew McNabb, who we found out of Scottish, Greer, Tommy Valentine, Liam Toms, Lydia. So many wonderful people. Thanks for coming on out. It meant a lot to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And we look forward to seeing more people maybe on the floor today. It's not That's a time travel sort of comment, because who knows when we'll actually get this episode loaded.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to try to keep this like the other episodes we've done here on the fly in the hotel room to about an hour or a little under. This one is perhaps the roughest and readiest episode of Force Center we've done in quite some time, because we knew we would be covering the Lucasfilm panel. We knew we'd be covering the Ahsoka panel. And then we slotted Monday to record whatever. So the news that has rolled out, it's bits and pieces. Some of it is we went to the Obi-Wan panel, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Kathleen Kennedy has been quoting up a storm. Lots of articles that we're struggling to keep up with. We just watched the streaming portion of the Bad Batch panel in our hotel rooms. So we'll just catch up on some of the news and and any of the stuff that we glance over briefly, we will talk about in more detail and with quotes in front of us, because we don't have all that.
We don't have all that. I haven't even seen all the Kathleen Kennedy stuff. There's some great interviews out there. People are asking me, did you hear it? I'm like, I can't. In fact, you know, you at home, CouchCon has its benefits. You probably get more of these news stories. You probably have more details. Case in point. A lot of people here, not just Joseph, and a lot of people in London think the lightsabers the baddies have in Ahsoka are red. But people outside of London think they're orangey. We don't know. Everyone in that room, that panel, thinks they're red. So maybe we saw something different. We'll figure it out. But it's actually kind of fun to be loosey-goosey just diving in the news as we know it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first bit of news that we know, because we saw the tweets, is the High Republic publishing panel. Clearly, it was well-attended. People loved the High Republic. And I've talked to a couple of people who were there who said it was just such a thrill to feel the love, obviously, of the High Republic, but also the sort of reciprocated, you've invested in the publishing. We want to make you feel like the publishing is, it's not lesser than. It's a part of everything. So it sounds like they teed it up in a really great way. To bring Leslie Headland out to show the people who came to the High Republic panel the teaser trailer for Acolyte, and then the really special reveal that the High Republic character, Vernestra Rowe, is in the television show The Acolyte.
Yeah.
I think both you and I have been on record as really liking Vernestra Rowe. For me, she's right up there with Reeth Sylas, which is the highest High Republic compliment I can give. She's a great character. We're really getting to see her at the beginning of her journey. Timeline-wise, then we're going to get to sort of jump ahead and see her as a mature Jedi. So what are your reactions to all of that, to the revelation, to the character?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And Rebecca Henderson, Leslie's partner, I believe, wife playing that role, and it made me think of my initial thought was silly. I was like, oh, that's a long lifespan. That's great. Good for her. No, I'm excited about that. And again, we weren't at this panel. Some of this is secondhand information, but I had this conversation in a hotel lobby bar with someone who was at the panel, and I was just talking about how I'm so excited for Acolyte. But you know, the reality is, Leslie didn't pitch that as a High Republic show. She came to them and they kind of said this. And the person on the panel goes, yeah, Leslie said exactly what happened. That she pitched the show and they said, well, if you want to do in this era, this transition into the Phantom Menace era, it's going to have to be in the High Republic. And Leslie embraced that fully. Obviously, reading the book, she said for Light and Life at the panel that we were at. And that is just, I love hearing that. I love hearing that. There's sometimes you've said you don't want the publishing to feel less than, and there's been some incidents, you know, and some changes last couple of years that I totally understand. It makes it feel fans of books like, well, wait a minute, what are we investing in? And I think it's fair to adapt stories and change them and add your own take as a creator. I'm just super excited that Leslie Headland, once again, fully understanding Star Wars, fully loving Star Wars, and ready to play in the sandbox, that sandbox everyone talks about. So all around good news.
Yeah, absolutely good news. And if it was just any character from the High Republic books, I would feel all those great things about the great news, the interconnectivity, the publishing is not less than. Vernestra Rowe is extra fascinating to me because her role so far in phase one of the High Republic has been sort of a beacon of the power of youth. But being on the beginning of your journey, since she is naturally gifted and made Jedi Knight at a ridiculously young age, already has a Padawan, But she's also wrestling with, I have this light whip. What does that mean about who I am? I'm sure that we will see a full completion of her story when she's young in phase three of the High Republic. But to then just see that one blurry snapshot that somebody took at the panel of her as an older Jedi.
Yeah.
Star Wars has this great tradition of the cycles of life. And to know that we start this character in publishing, Vernestra Rowe, as a beacon of youth, going to have her ups and downs, but who is she after she's lived through it all?
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, old Ben, old Luke, they are traditions of Star Wars. And I can't wait to see old Vernestra Rowe, who's been through it, and somebody who has now lived through, like, I started in the good old days, and things ain't what they used to be. Like, Vernestra Rowe in The Acolyte is older and yelling at clouds. She's right. She's right to be yelling at clouds because bad changes are happening. You know,
bad things are going on. No, it's fascinating. And, you know, I think when a lot of stuff came out earlier about this being a High Republic show, I remember kind of even fighting back against that, saying, like, look, I just don't think that's necessarily what I'm expecting, the complete ending of that era. And I still don't expect that. Mm-mm. But this is technically, it's truly, I should say, a High Republic show with Vernestra Rowe's going to be there. It's part of the end, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and we'll see exactly how large the role is. Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah.
Should we move on to our next bit of news?
Let's do it. I think I heard it.
Okay, here is everything that I know from seeing a tweet.
Yes.
Dave Filoni announced season 2 of Tales of the Jedi. When did he announce it? On what panel? Probably the Clone Wars, I'm guessing. I don't know. We normally pride ourselves on research, so we want to let you know we don't know. The only thing we know.
My number one news source has been the Force Center Discord. many people on CouchCon, many people here who are at some of these panels. So shout out to folks like Tim Van Nuland, who we finally met in person, and again, Mark and Ilka, a lot of those people. Getting out of panels and posting their information in Discord. It's helped us who have been here. I'm tremendously excited about it. I think Tales of the Jedi have some of the best stuff to come out last couple of years, and some of my favorite Dave work, to be honest. I'm really honest about that. Who it will be, I can only wonder.
Yeah. I think we'll have more fun speculating. I know the little bit I've had a chance to talk to other people about, I think people are really excited about, can this show jump around in eras?
Love that.
That it's not necessarily Tales of the Jedi from the Clone Wars general era, because that's the animation style, but could it be High Republic? Could it be a one-off, how did, you know, Buryaga, you know, start his journey or whatever? Could it be a Reeth Silas studying session? But also jumping forward, I think I'm now getting to the point where I'm saying this every other episode. Luke had a functioning Jedi
group, go there.
Jedi Order. At least that's what the Rise of Kylo Ren comic book. One comic book. Yeah. One four-issue comic book series, which is phenomenal. But the idea that that does exist and is a point on the timeline map that could be played with.
Yeah.
That's really exciting to me. I think my speculation is that after seeing season one of Tales of the Jedi, cleanup is not exactly the right word what I'm looking for. But, like, right. It felt like once Filoni kind of had that Ahsoka idea, and then, you know, the story he's told is like, I kind of had this Ahsoka idea. Can we just do a little one-off? And the answer coming back of, like, well, if you could make a little group of these. Yeah. And where I'm going with this is it feels like there are things that have been on the map of the story of this era in Dave's mind, and maybe from discussions with George, too, back in the day. And that first season of Tales of the Jedi was an opportunity to say, this has always been floating in my head, and I kind of proceed as though these things are true. I'm going to show them to the audience.
Yes, that's a great way to describe it. I think you and I in the past have discussed, you could go all around the map, and there's so many characters to explore. It's not that Dave wouldn't want to. He's clearly plugged into all that stuff, especially with what he is doing with Mando, even more than Ahsoka. You have to be aware of Cobb Vanth came from this book, and he's very clearly aware. I think he likes Star Wars, but you're exactly right. I think it's a chance to explore that, where it's not just like, oh, cool, I can finally show that unproduced episode of the Kyber Crystals that everyone talks about. Yeah. Maybe, but I don't think that's what he's trying to do. I don't think he's trying to I can finally show you this scene. It's let me explore an idea. Let me see things that weren't fully that themes or lessons or things that I didn't get a chance to tell you, or like you said, are in his mind on a plane flight back up to San Fran from Burbank. Like, I that actually excites me. So eventually one day I'd like this to be a series that goes on, and maybe some other creators get in. It's not a shot at Dave, just like, hey, who's got a thought on Ben Solo and Luke? Who's got that? Let's do 3 15-minute shorts on that. That'd be great. But for right now, it's him. I'm expecting it to be in the Clone Wars era.
Yeah.
Or out of it, or related to it.
Do you have any speculation on if it is in the Clone Wars era, and it isn't, here's a one-off with Kit Fisto, because Kit Fisto is awesome, but right. rather right. it is, what is some more of the pillars of this era mm-hmm. that we want to put down? Do you feel like there are any particular Clone Wars era Jedi who kind of are not just fun and interesting, but are carrying a little bit of the weight of the story of the time?
I would actually like to see a little more with Yoda. The stuff with the season 6 of Yoda is amazing, right? It's mm-hmm. stunning. And I think Yoda, during that time, I don't know his perspective on what's happening. Maybe we get some, why does he say in the prequels, younger Jedi are getting a little arrogant, getting a little too chuffed. Uh-huh. Why does Yoda have that thought? What's the one-to-one? Is it the students? Is he now teaching some kids who are talking back? I don't know. But again, it's not just it's not the plot. It's what it means. That's good. Quinlan Voss is a great example of mm-hmm. not just, hey, we know he survived, but how? That'd be interesting. But what was going through a wild and free Jedi's mind during that time?
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I look for.
Yeah. I think I'd be really interested in continuing the story that was started building up to the Clone Wars of where are the Jedi in the Republic starting to get too locked in their ways, and how is that causing them to fail? And I think what was so great about Tales of the Jedi is seeing that Dooku and Qui-Gon and Yaddle were all accurately perceiving issues.
Yes.
Dooku responded to them with very poor choices.
Yes.
A
yes.
horrible evil. Yaddle died. Qui-Gon died. So what are the figures who might continue to wrestle with, this isn't right, and how can we contrast that with a little adventure of Mace or Ki-Adi in particular that show how they're well-intentioned, but they are way too locked in their ways. In particular, even the logic that I think is there, maybe I headcanon a little bit, of justifying the Clone Wars as, at the beginning, is its defense. The separatists are attacking.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our job to defend the Republic. We don't mm-hmm. want to be a military, but they raised a military. Right. This is still within Jedi purview. It's defense.
Yeah.
But then suddenly the best defense becomes offense, mm-hmm. and by the time we get to the Pong Krell arc, they're just an invading a sovereign world.
Yeah.
And seeing the contrasting Jedi perspectives on rationalizing that. It touched on very lightly in the Clone Wars. Mm. You could go deep with Illuminari Unduli. You could show the breaking of Barriss Offee. What mission were Barriss and Luminara on, where she was like, yeah, this is so not right, that like Dooku, she's right that it's not right, but it's not right what she does to make it right.
Yeah, that's a great thought there. There's things around those characters. There's one that I think got. I think Dave even acknowledged that he's like, I knew, unfortunately, it wasn't going to have a ton of her in season 7. That's Padme.
Ooh.
And could you explore some of that? Now, as we know, the 6 episodes, 3 Dooku, 3 Ahsoka, clearly intertwined, clearly played with each other in terms of themes. So I'm trying to pair characters in my head.
Right.
Padme and Ki-Adi. Why does Ki-Adi, it turns out I should have listened to Padme. Be good. Young Boba Fett's an interesting character, too. Get Daniel Logan to come back in and explore some of that. But again, It's all up to the all up to Dave.
Pong Krell and Dexter Jetster. There we go. not Dexter, not technically a Jedi. A chef, a Jedi chef, perhaps he is. I also, this is my last thought on Tales of Jedi, because we'll have plenty of time to talk about it. Because the Mandoverse is clearly setting up the state of the galaxy for the sequels. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think it's fixing the sequels. Mm-hmm. I think it's doing exactly what the Clone Wars did for the prequels, is building out the world and mm-hmm. the characters and the reasons it happened. It is intriguing to me that Filoni's mindset is looking forward to the sequels. So he might be in the headspace to go, I want to show you Luke's mindset when mm-hmm. he decided to take Ben on as a student. You know, it makes a little bit more sense to me, since that is, Filoni is right now in the mode of showing you the building blocks to get us to the sequel trilogy.
I love that you said that, because, again, it's not that Dave doesn't have the big picture and that he doesn't love all of Star Wars. But, you know, as a creator, he's focused in on not just characters he created, but just timelines that he's worked in, what he's interested in explaining and that stuff. But he's got the big picture in mind. But he has touched Luke Skywalker.
Right.
It's been very much a part of what he's done. And writing that stuff in the Book of Boba Fett episode, he spent some time in Luke's head.
Mm-hmm.
And that. So there's a distinct possibility. Who knows? Maybe we'll even get that Ahsoka-Luke campfire conversation.
You know, that's actually the very perfect place to do it. The 15-minute straight campfire conversation.
There you go. There you go.
Beautiful. All right. We're going to keep moving on.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique. And your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On, we're going to go into some Kathleen Kennedy bouillabaisse.
Yes.
We're just pulling bits and pieces of things that she said. And also just kind of, I feel like the news, the big picture news is, for me, is on the panel, she was very direct.
Mm-hmm.
She announced the films, and that was that. She has, there was a press line after that panel, and I think a lot of the quotes that are dribbling out in articles are from different conversations on that press line. But there's a through line to the ones that I've quickly read of her being very direct, not just saying we'll see, like about Taika Waititi's movie. I'm paraphrasing from a thing I read quickly, saying he's still working on it. He's taking his time. He wants to work on it himself. He's very protective of it. That's a lot more details. She even said about Rian Johnson, like, I'd love it. He's really busy. He's making this. He's making that. We'll see. She was very clear on Obi-Wan of, we're really interested in it, but straight up, not an active development period.
Right.
Not playing coy, not being mysterious. We'll talk about the crawl quote. She told somebody asked if the New Jedi Order movie with Rey would have the crawl, and she said the crawls are for movies. The movies will have crawls.
Yeah.
That's also, normally it would be coy.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the big picture. How are you feeling about, do you think it's a new tone, or do you think I'm overstating it?
I think it's a new tone, and that's, I think both you and I are trying to responsibly speculate and read into the tea leaves. you said off air, Kathy Unleashed, and I don't think that's incorrect at all. And again, you stated, we'll highlight again, I have not seen the IGN interview that people are talking about. It's been talked about at every party I've been at. It's been talked about on the panel floor, and you and I have seen tweets. So we're kind of collecting. And who knows? Maybe we will do a fuller, deeper dive on Kathleen Kennedy at Celebration 2023. But you and I sitting in that panel on Friday, I just kind of had that thought. I was like, what if she's not here? Like, what if she doesn't want to make the trip to London? A lot of people didn't. And she not only showed up, she was on that studio showcase panel the entire time. And
like literally physically didn't leave the stage.
Did not leave the stage. And getting some intel from that later, hotel lobby parties are great because a lot of people, myself included, have a little bit of looser lips with the alcohol flow. I did hear from someone 1 degree removed from it. That was her decision. Mm-hmm. And the host of the event was like, she didn't leave. And she wanted to be up there. The decision was made for her to be up there. And I take that as a visual response.
Yep.
I'm Kathleen Kennedy. I'm here. I got to do my job. You're not all going to like it, but I'm here. I got a great pair of sneakers on that Rick liked it when he came out. But I'm in charge. And I think that set the tone for what – I'm not surprised. I was not surprised to get these little bits of quotes from her.
Yeah.
Seem a little bit more like, no, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really powerful. Yeah. And we are lucky to hear from, you know, people who are on the press line without, you know, spoiling any confidence of any specifics. The impression that was communicated to me was like that was her error in the line, that it was an evasion. It was like, what question you got? I'm going to give you the really straight answer. And if you push a little bit, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Give you an even straighter answer, and that's going to be that.
Yeah.
And to me, my speculation, and it is total speculation, but reading the tea leaves, is that this might be in relation to a transition of Bobs.
It's a transition of Bobs. One's going out and one's coming back.
Yep. Bye, Bob. Hi, Bob. Bye, Bob. Hi, Bob. Bob Chapek, to me, a part of the struggles of his tenure is wanting to keep things quiet, right? He didn't want to engage with the choices of the current Florida governor in a way that Disney normally did.
When
Iger was in charge, Iger just go, nope, we can't support that, or we're going to put out a statement. And that's actually what caused a lot of this is... Chapek just made, at first he didn't say anything, and then it upset people. And then he said kind of a half thing, and that upset people anyway.
Yeah.
And since Iger has been back, it's been Bob unleashed. Mm-hmm. He has been much more direct about this is what's not working. This is what we're not going to do. Hey, we may or may not buy Hulu. Or we might sell it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just got up. I only had my first cup of coffee, and Bob hasn't decided if he's going to buy Hulu yet. Like, there's an energy to it.
Yeah.
There's still a choice in what is being communicated. It's not like they're just, like, loose lips.
Yeah.
But it's a communication-style choice
mm-hmm.
that is directly opposed to what Chapek was doing. Mm-hmm. And the way Iger has been speaking is exactly aligned with the way Kathleen Kennedy has been speaking this weekend. So it seems to me like maybe it is a choice to say, it's okay, let's be more direct, let's be more honest, let's be more firm.
Yeah, I don't think Kathleen Kennedy sits down and watches YouTube videos.
No.
But there are people that are paid to monitor that kind of stuff. There are people that pay to analyze this stuff. I have a friend who has that job for another company. And sometimes it's just to see. It's not just to see, well, what are they saying? It's not like Favreau going, we got a report card every week after an episode. It's what, as a company, what are we saying? So enough red-eyed thumbnail photos. That's actually one thing. But more reporter types coming out with stories, well, she's going to get fired if this movie doesn't get made, and this, that, you know, and that all might be true. But I just think, I think there's a little bit of fighting back, a little bit of going, hey, stop this. We do have a plan. We do have this. And also, I'm not giving you everything. She didn't tell us. She wasn't like, yes, we have this. Ray's coming back. Damon Lindelof left 3 months ago. And it's just like, no, this is going forward. This is what we got.
Yeah.
And that's why you and I think are aligned that the announcement on Friday, the showcase panel, was a confident announcement. Mm-hmm. Yes, things will happen. I talked about this with some of our fans last night at the bar, or at the pub, excuse me, wrong country. Things still might not happen.
Yeah.
James Mangold's movie might, who knows?
Yeah.
That's the way it works. One day it falls apart. You'd never know, but the announcement seems confident. Those sneakers were confident. I think Kathleen Kennedy is here, flew to London to, you know, where they come a lot, because Pinewood's here, flew to London to be like, all right, we're setting some records straight.
Yeah, absolutely. There was one thing that I can't remember if it was that I read it or I was told it in a pub, so I'm not going to say it in case it actually hasn't been published yet. But it was Kathleen Kennedy saying, hey, that thing that you're asking me about that has been made a big deal, the press made it a big deal.
The Feige movie.
Is this public?
I do believe it is, because someone else said. I think it was in the IGN interview, one of them. And again, we apologize, listeners. We're not joking. There's a lot going on. You get overwhelmed.
Seriously, we have slept maybe a total of about 12 hours the last 4 days. It's beautiful, but it is hard to keep up.
Yeah. So yes, it was related to that. That the Feige film might, again, totally paraphrasing, Feige film wasn't going to happen. The press made that up, is what was communicated to us.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's important to me, because it feels like if there's going to be this much scrutiny mm-hmm. of the normal development process, because mm-hmm. it's Star Wars, but we see that snowballing, this is reported, now everybody kind of believes it's true, that mm-hmm. there's going to be more pushback, but more controlling of the narrative.
Yes.
And I feel like that's what's great about the communication from mm-hmm. Iger and Kathleen Kennedy, is that I think a sort of a traditional communication is, don't say anything until you know it.
Yeah.
Evade and be cheeky and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's different about the tone is, if the answer is we don't know yet, we're going to say we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
If it's been overblown in the papers, we're going to say you overblew it.
Yeah.
If we know, we're going to say it, and we're going to put our whole backs into it.
Yeah. I think because we're in this era of, obviously, everything's changed. Everything's changed for 10 years in the way movies are covered. But I cite a lot that, you know, look at what James Gunn does in D.C. I'm not here to defend everything he's ever tweeted, and especially in the last year. But he's got that, like, fine, I'm out there. You got a dumb story, I'm going to tell you that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at, especially with, you have so many folks out there with podcasts and YouTube channels and official trades or unofficial trades who weaponize this news. It's something you and I have talked and discussed a lot this weekend. If you're going to weaponize the news, then we might have to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lightsaber. I don't want to use it. but I think that's kind of where we're at. And I can't wait to sit down. Maybe I'll do it tonight. little calmer night.
Yeah.
Tonight. I'll sit down and watch that interview.
Yeah, we'll do some scrolling.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think we should continue to celebrate the movie news and clarity on different things is what we've been asking for, I think, as Star Wars fans forever. And I think it is an acknowledgement that there have been some hiccups on the movie side. Mm-hmm. And it's really like we got the reins. We're moving forward. Let's go.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I do want to touch quickly on the crawl thing. We've talked about the crawls over the years and kind of their importance to the movies, both in terms of the mood, but also in making sure that, you know, your aunt that you take to Rogue One knows that's not Jyn. helping people out a little bit of like, why is Maul there? The crawls aren't going to do everything for that, but there's mood and there is context. Even for hardcore Star Wars fans, right? Every once in a while, you have to go that, like, wait, who's alive? How old is Obi-Wan now? Is Han a baby or is he dead? Where are we? That's a beauty of the timeline. So there's the mood-setting power of the crawls, but there's also that getting us clear on where we are and what's at stake in the timeline. How do you feel about the idea that the crawls will be back for every film?
I love it on so many levels. I'll start with the best level. Before we left the day, I was packing for London. I put on Revenge of the Sith. And do you know what I did as I was packing? I read the crawl out loud. In that faux British announcer voice. There are heroes on both sides. That's part of the fun, right?
And it is everywhere.
Yeah, war indeed. So I love that. And we've talked about the Solo one. In fact, I feel as though I'm just stealing from people in Discord because I've been reading y'all. I've been going in Discord to see what I've missed, hear reactions. And there's been two comments, about that. But one of them was like, my follow-up to her would be, does Solo count as a crawl? Is it a full crawl? From her tone, it seems like it's a full crawl. But even something like Solo, I think I've highlighted it before here. Others in Discord highlighted House of the Dragon did a great crawl in a way to really say, we know not every one of you has read A Song of Ice and Fire. Not every one of you has read the World of Ice and Fire books. So we're going to tell you where House of the Dragon is. And it ends with the words being highlighted 172 years before Daenerys Targaryen. And it was artsy. It fit the vibe. But it also served a wonderful purpose because you're right. Rey or Jyn? Who is that? If you're listening to this podcast, you've all had those conversations with friends. I thought Darth Maul died. That was a conversation everyone had in 2018 at a party. I really thought he died. So I think it's exciting and it's fun, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you know, the crawl example for Solo, it does have a crawl in a way. It has text, right?
Yes.
But it could have been a larger crawl, and I know the crawl wouldn't say, and hey, guys. Here's a timeline of Darth Maul. Here's the exact date, BBY that he got his spider legs. That wouldn't have helped with that. But I think with the emphasis on timeline in the movies, and that's the value of where we're going way, way, way back here. What is the state of society? What is the state of technology? What is going on in the galaxy? Is it a time of chaos in not the discovery of the Force, but I guess the sort of unifying of Force believers. Mm-hmm. Is that a response to what's going on in the galaxy?
Yeah.
You know, that the crawls really help with things like that. If somebody has not watched every episode of every season of the Mandoverse when Filoni's movie comes out, I'm sure that's going to be constructed to be like, you can just watch this movie.
Yeah.
And the crawl will set you up.
Yeah.
I think that there's also a real awareness to how do we make the movies feel different, bigger, unique, special than the television shows.
Yes.
And now Disney Plus really has its tradition of, whose helmet or face
is
in this little teaser, and that music is going to grow and grow and become iconic and become of its time.
Yeah.
And so to have the crawl be like, but this is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
When that crawl hits the screen, you're at a Star Wars film.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I love the solo one. When I've talked about its connection to Willow, and Ron Howard is the same crawl from Willow, that vibe. That worked for me. But the Rogue One, I missed it. I think Bob was a little bit more angry pounding on the collider table back in the day. give me the crawl. But that's the thing. The solo Rogue One of it all, the Star Wars story kind of experiment, I think it's okay to say not all aspects of it worked, including the marketing or getting the context out there. And guess what? They might have learned from that. And that's what you want as artists. How many times have I put a podcast out and then changed my mind and go, that's not the style. I'm going to tweak my style. That didn't hit. That didn't work. So if they're doing that as a company, that's a good thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, go ahead.
No, when we're ready to transition, I want to throw a curveball story at you that I read just this morning.
I got one more thought, and then please, curveball me. My other thought is, I don't know that it will necessarily play out in every movie. I think Star Wars is wide and diverse, and its tone should be wide and diverse, but I don't ever want to forget that the crawl is a part of the legacy of adventure serial.
Yes, yes.
Space fantasy serial adventure. That crawl is like a map at the beginning of an 800-page fantasy book of where the little hobbit guy is going to walk. You know, it's a part of the genre, and it is a statement. And it doesn't mean that maybe one of these movies is going to be, you know, grounded and like Andor. But think of an opening crawl at the beginning of Andor that reminds you. It's still that same galaxy. It's still that same pulpy, weird place. Yeah. Because that's what the crawl is.
That's a great point. It's a great point.
All right, curveball me.
Coming out of the Kathleen Kennedy stuff and being a little bit more open and honest, or making sure all of us as Star Wars fans kind of seek out the actual stories, or seek out, it's fun to speculate, all the kind of stuff we talk about. There was a quote from Dave Filoni, probably from a press line, where someone asked him about his movie being an Avengers-style kind of film with all the characters meeting the Mandoverse, meeting up for this big story. And he said, I would not exactly say it's that.
Mm.
And he said, yes, people will be there, but I don't think it's accurate to say that. Paraphrasing a little bit there. That was a great little bit of information because, that makes me even more excited for the film. That, again, it is story first versus a checkbox. And I'm not, by the way, not saying that's what Marvel did with Avengers. I want to make that clear. Or any other films where all the characters come together. But we kind of look at things so black and white, binary, you know, Marvel, Star Wars. It's an Avengers kind of a thing. And him being just like, I didn't say that. Who said that? No one has said that here. That was a great bit of information I saw just this morning.
Yeah, and no one has said the main character of his film is Din or Ahsoka, right?
Yeah.
I've made six seasons of movies joke about Mandalorian, but also like, hey, Dave's directing, but I would imagine Favreau maybe wants to have a hand in some of the Din storytelling. So I still think it's even a possibility like the main characters of this film are from the film.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka's there, you know, Luke's baby Jedi Order could be involved.
Yeah.
Din could be there. I don't know why I'm fascinated with Boba Fett and Zeb ending up together.
I think it would be great.
But I think it's really great to enjoy what we don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that Filoni is saying, like, don't start to have this thing that you build up for years and years and years. This movie could come out in 2030.
Really,
you
know? Good.
Yeah. Don't build up for years the expectation that it's going to be the portal scene from Avengers.
Yeah.
Want that, expect that, and then be upset because it's not.
Yeah. They said cinematic climactic event.
Yeah. They said what is end game.
What does that mean to them, not just us?
Yeah.
Anyways, curveball thrown.
Curveball. All right. We got two other topics we want to touch on. One is the Obi-Wan panel that you and I attended with our partners, Sarah and Grace. And as suspected, it was not a news panel.
Mm-hmm.
It was a look back. There was a lot about it that was great. We could do an hour on the panel.
Yeah.
I want to start with the newsy part and then maybe talk about our feelings.
Love it.
So the newsy part is that there's not news, but there was a full circle journey from Mr. Ewan McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
He has given so many interviews where he talked about not being able to talk about doing the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie that became a TV show. And he's made the joke of like, I didn't want to keep talking about it and be like, I'm out here stumping for a job.
Yeah, yeah.
He closes this panel by saying, it was so great. I bet you'd all like to see another one. Wouldn't you want to see another one? And everybody applauded. And I think some people thought, like, and here comes the announcement.
Yeah.
And then the host was like, well, thanks.
Thanks, bye. Bye.
It was not an announcement. It was Ewan McGregor going, I want this.
Yeah.
Kathleen Kennedy's on a press line saying, we'd love to. It is not in active development. Did you see all the things we just announced? That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
It's not in active development. I don't think that's a cheeky, I'm lying to hide the announcement, because there's not an announcement. So, to me, a picture was painted that Ewan McGregor wants to do it, and he's telling the fans, hey, yeah, keep banging that Kenobi drum, because I want to say hello there again to you. It's not yet a go picture, a go TV series. How do you feel about all that, the dynamics of it?
It's funny the way you say it's coming full circle. Yeah. And there was a great moment in the panel. We'll talk about the emotions of it, but where he just said, you know, my Star Wars life is back. And
powerful.
You got a sense when he said it, and he's been open in some of the interview stuff, that like he had not turned his back on Star Wars or the fans, but just like films he had done, number one. It was part of his job, part of his life. But number one, never thought he'd be able to come back. And two, probably didn't think he'd ever want to, especially with what was going on. He probably got tired. Just as much as he got questions about, hey, would you ever be Obi-Wan again? He probably got some questions of that were pretty bad. You know, a lot of people felt they had free reign to do that. I think that's my biggest problem with the Jake Lloyd stuff is some of those questions when he was trying to be still part of Star Wars and going to conventions. A lot of the questions were just a-holes poking, and I'm sure you wouldn't face it. So to hear him to be like, yeah, my Star Wars life is back and it's great, was wonderful. For him to be like, I'm not done yet. Can I play another character? Can I do something else? Or more Obi-Wan? And if he thinks there's stories to tell, I think that's fascinating. But I do, again, appreciate Kathleen Kennedy's honesty. That's why I think we went into that panel knowing that she had said, nah, we'd love to do it. Not on our writer's screen right now.
Yeah.
So good stuff.
Yeah. So I wanted a second season of Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it before. I think this would be lovely. But I think it is set up for a journey of, as Qui-Gon said to him, you know, we've got a long way to go. And it would be fascinated. You know, you need to find a way to have it be an external conflict as well.
Yeah.
But to have it be like, okay, I need to fully come to peace. I need to find my new direction as a Jedi. I would love to see Ewan McGregor get to sink his teeth into that. So I want it to happen. But let's just talk about the emotions of it, because it was a real look back. There were some just great, straightforward questions about the process, the choices. But to me, it was really the back half of the panel that was powerful. Each of the people involved were asked to share their favorite scene. Yeah. And then the scenes were played on that big screen.
Yeah.
And I think it was powerful on a lot of levels. I think it pulled a little bit more out of everybody is interviewees to talk about why those scenes were their favorite. And I think it was really powerful to just see that on a big screen.
Yeah.
Because I love the show. The couple little quibbles. The quibbles are much stronger for other people.
Yeah.
You know, enjoyment breaking quibbles. But one of the things that, for me, that I just kind of wrestled with is, like, this feels huge. This feels like a chapter of the Skywalker saga. It feels a little small on my television screen.
Yeah.
So it was powerful to see it on a big screen in front of an audience. And it was interesting to see how it changed the dynamic. Did it change the dynamic of you for you?
Added to it. Changed it to go look at it. They showed the they opened the panel with that little flashback, so to speak, of Obi-Wan meditating and trying to talk to Qui-Gon as Vader is being rebuilt, and that scene of Vader marching out of his chamber, right, with the grate and the music playing. And it felt so good, and it felt big. I think you're right, but the smaller moments felt just as big, right?
Yeah.
Each person, like you said, showed their favorite scene, and I think Deborah Chow chose to show the scene of Vader and Obi-Wan, Vader marching through the the city there as Obi-Wan sees him for the first time since Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of Vader violence in that scene, and she had a great comment about it. Yeah, also it's just, you know, kind of cool to see Vader kick ass and murder people. But that was great. But it was little scenes, and it just you're right. Everyone got to kind of go in deeper to the emotions. This panel was emotional. We'll talk about that here in a second. But it really discussed themes, the whys, the emotions, and that made the series feel even more relevant to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they all the scenes were phenomenal. It was the Vader as Michael Myers scene.
Yeah.
The walking down, you know, to torture people to draw Obi-Wan out and Obi-Wan see the horror of what Anakin had truly become.
Yeah.
Extremely powerful. I think it was Vivian Lyra Blair, right? Mm-hmm.
I've always said Vivian Lyra Blair, but I thought Amy Radcliffe said Lyra. maybe the whole time we've been wrong. It wouldn't be the first in Star Wars.
No. But that phenomenal little scene in part three about where Leia asks, "Are you my real father?" and they really connect over Obi-Wan basically saying, I'm basically adopted too. The Jedi were my family. Incredibly meaningful. The delivery on. I think I had a brother. Mm-hmm. You know that scene is it's so small and so lovely, but so powerful and echoes out in so many ways. That was like kind of probably the smallest, most intimate. Because then we saw some fight scenes. We saw the amazing. Yeah, Obi-Wan telling Leia the gifts she had received from her parents. But it was powerful to see them. I don't know. It was nice to see even the small moments feel larger than life on a big screen.
Yeah,
and
it's a good point.
Hear people cheer and applaud and sniffle.
A lot of it.
Yeah, it was really powerful.
Yeah, no, this was a fun panel to attend. Grace got to attend it, and she's never been to a convention properly before. She's been, when we were all part of Collider, she went to a WonderCon, but it was like we went straight to the panel and then went straight to a bar, and everyone went home. She's never attended a convention. She wanted to get to this panel. We were blessed to have Sarah win a lottery and be able to plus one Grace in. And we sat next to them, and Hayden is everything to her. Ewan is Obi-Wan is everything to her. She's a prequel kid. So I started to pick up on her emotions. She had so much fun. But man, I had this conversation several times yesterday. That opening, I started to cry, and it wouldn't be the first time I've cried in Star Wars. But surprisingly, like the panel hadn't even officially begun, and they showed the Obi-Wan reaching out to Qui-Gon and Darth Vader. And I just started to cry because I was like, I can't believe we got this. Mm. And yes, there's little quibbles there. Yes, the speeder does not look good. All right? The TK-47 speeder does not look good. All right. There's things here and there. Totally got it. I feel it, too. You out there might feel it more. As Joseph said, story-breaking quibbles, what'd you say?
Mm-hmm.
But I started to cry, and I thought, oh, here I go again. I'm just having an emotional Star Wars day. And by the end, when Ewan, his favorite scene was the telling Leia, you have the traits of your mother and father. I was crying. I talked to our listeners again, Ilka, Mark Knope, and our buddy Alden Diaz was there, and all of them had the same reaction. The guy started crying the moment the panel started and cried all the way through it. And I think it's because this series, for all the things that it, so they had their first lightsaber fight was on an oil refinery out in, you know, Riverside, California. I don't know where they shot it. Well, I do know some of the places where they shot it, in Pacoima. And it's not, and I all those critiques are great, but man, if you can push past that and connect with what they're telling as artists, we got some of the best moments, I think, in recent stars. And I'll put them up there in all of Star Wars. And I think that the panel reached in and pulled that out. And pulled it out. Every Hayden up there, Vivian, Deborah Chow, Ewan McGregor, Indira Varma, all talked about the why. And the why is what brings us back. And so I think that's what it made the panel so emotional. It was really a special thing, but completely unexpected.
Yeah.
I expected to cheer. I like you, Hayden, too. And Hayden is emotional. Hayden almost cried on the Star Wars Live stage yesterday. And this cast, even though Indira's character, Tala, is no longer with us. But who knows? She can come back, right? from an explosion. That cast, it seemed the emotions were strong with them as well, which is why I want a second season. And, you know, here's a thought I have, too, and I'll pass the armor hammer back to you. A second season, I don't know if it needs Vader. But I do want something more, because I think Hayden's got a lot of story to tell with Vader. I'm now more than ever open to the idea of a Disney Plus Vader series, which I wouldn't have. I would have been like, we got the comics, the great Charles Soule stuff. Vader's had his time. I'd be a little bit on that side. But when you hear Hayden talk about Vader, he's plugged into some big things going on inside the head of Anakin that I would love to see him explore in a series.
He is so sweet, so sincere, and I think what people have really seen for a long time but are so celebrating about his performance in the prequels and in Kenobi is there is this roiling intensity boiling under this clearly thoughtful, soft-spoken, kind man. You can sense, like, it's sometimes hard to kind of get him to go a little deeper. He's so grateful. He's so nice. And there's sometimes like, are we gonna get something from Hayden that he hasn't said before?
Yeah, yeah.
And he just talked very briefly about the duality of Vader, and there was like this intensity the way he said it that I feel like he's out on his farm, whatever it is. Somebody at one point said it was a llama farm.
I'm
picturing Hayden Christian out there. I don't know how you farm llamas. I don't know. Petting a llama and stewing about Vader.
Yeah.
Thinking about Vader. So I'm with you. I would love a Kenobi Vader season.
Yeah.
Some people might not like this at all. My thing is I don't need them to see them go head to head again. Mm-mm. I wouldn't mind it. It's a parallel.
Yes.
They're both going on journeys. And their journeys are highlighting one another, and it's almost like they thematically intertwine. Maybe it's even about Vader wanting to find a way to move around Palpatine and continue the search for Kenobi, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I'd be really interested in something like that.
It would be based around the Qui-Gon's line. What's the line? There's much farther to go. But also with Vader.
Yeah.
Almost if Palpatine's like, there's much more far for you to go to be a Dark Lord.
Yeah. Which I know they've wrestled with in the comics. Yeah.
Yes, totally. But anyways.
Yeah. I'll try to keep this short, but there was so much in the panel that moved me. I'm not going to keep it short. I will try to keep it reasonable. One of my critiques of the show is I think it shows that it was adapted from a three-act structure film.
Yeah.
And plot-wise, I think part four is a little janky structurally. And I really, really felt that when I sat down and watched the whole thing.
Right? Yeah.
So, hey, that's a criticism. In its opinion, totally fine if part four is somebody's favorite or somebody else who has a different structural argument and sees it in a different way and disagrees with me, fine. I'm expressing an opinion, not a fact. But Indira Varma picked a scene from part four is her favorite scene. And it was an amazing thing that happened. I think because Moses Ingram wasn't there, there was a shout out to her and three rounds of applause for her.
Yeah.
But they didn't talk a lot about Reva or Reva's arc in the show.
Yeah.
But Indira Varma talked about why that scene mattered to her. And there's a moment where right before Reva spoke, I remember like, oh yeah, she's got that great line delivery on this. It's the line where, unless of course you're lying, where lying floats away like a child lost a balloon, and it's so threatening and creepy.
Yeah,
and Reva has amazing delivery throughout. And for me, it was just one of those nice moments of like, okay, maybe I'm always going to agree with myself that structurally, part four is a little janky. But what are the joys in it?
Yeah.
And that scene was about, the next time I watch this, I'm going to watch this entire episode, and it's going to be about Indira Varma's character for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to appreciate it more.
Yeah.
So that scene was powerful. Yeah. The scene always breaks me, but it was in a different way. The way everybody structured their favorite scenes was a little bit chronological. And I believe we did end with the Obi-Wan and Leia
departing
scene and saying goodbye. That scene always breaks me. There's something different about it. I don't know if it was being in the room. I don't know if it was being with you and Sarah and Grace. Seeing it on the big screen, seeing it with the actors there. It was like I was ripped open in a good way. copious rolling tears. And I was talking with Sarah a little bit about what's so powerful about it. I think it's this exchange of gifts between Leia and Obi-Wan. Leia has wanted to know a little something. She doesn't need to know everything, right?
Right.
She ends the scene by saying, "That's good. That's all I need to know." But Obi-Wan's giving her this gift, and I so feel like Leia's also giving him a gift by being there to receive his eulogy for his friends.
Yeah.
And saying, "They're gone. I didn't save them. I couldn't save them. But I need to let that go, and I need to celebrate them," right?
Yeah.
And then I think for me, it's also just like, you know what? It's sometimes hard to pinpoint when a scene makes you cry.
Because
that whole scene is lovely. Her joke about you should take a nap and his perfect uncle laugh.
A
funny joke. But it's the moment where he goes in and he's like, "I'm going to do this."
Or
Princess Leia Organa, and her theme hits. You know, it's like, here we go. The moment is happening. Oh, I've been ripped open. Because it's about us as the audience too, right?
Yeah.
Leia is one of the original characters. We've got to go on the journey, and Leia helped save the galaxy multiple times.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons she was able to do that is because of this generational tale that she is of her mother and father, and that she has the gifts of her biological mother and father, as well as her you know, mother and father. Of Bail and Brea. So it's so about them, but I think it's also just like a tribute to the journey that Star Wars fans have gone on in the benefit of this long generational tale.
And it all kind of not coming to a head because there's more to tell, I think. But
End
of a journey for a lot of us. No, it's powerful. I think we'd be remiss to not mention just how wonderful Vivian Lyra Blair was on the panel. Everyone tweeting like, she's more articulate and more 30-year-olds, and it's true. And I think sometimes it's often the case with young actors. They're a little bit that's part of the gift. That's part of their skill set. So without a doubt, I wasn't surprised at how great she was on the panel. But also at the same time, I left out of there going, you have about a 2 or 3 year window that you need to cast her as young Leia. And a young Leia saves the day, Disney Plus series. That you have this window before Princess of Alderaan. And here, I think you have just she really got Leia. That was clear on the show. It was even more clear on the panel.
Yeah,
that this youngster embodies so much of the spirit, which is what Deborah Chow talked about. We weren't looking for who can do a Carrie Fisher impersonation.
We don't want that.
We don't want that. Who can catch the spirit of Leia and Carrie Fisher? That was very specific point that they made. Not weird, very specific. It wasn't just who can we cast as Leia? Who can we cast as young Carrie Fisher? And that was the testament to Carrie's power in that role, we know, but and I think they nailed it, obviously. But it's great.
Yeah, it was hugely powerful. Obviously, she's an incredibly intelligent person, and somebody who clearly knows, like, okay, this is the job, and I'm gonna try to be good at paneling because that's a part of the job.
Part of the job.
And she's a young person learning, and I'm sure she's been told this is a part of the job. And like, all right, well, I'll knock it out of the park. But there is still some just natural humor in, like. Is this a 13 going on 30 Freaky Friday thing? Is 30-year-old Jennifer Garner in her pocket?
Great. It was great.
Yeah, really, really impressive and really great to see the vibe between her and Ewan. People probably didn't get to see because I think it was before I don't know if it was streamed. Anyway, in the pre-show, everyone who was dressed as Obi-Wan was invited onto the stage. There's a bunch of Obi-Wans. And then Ewan McGregor popped out and surprised them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of them were turning and thinking of that meme that goes around from the Graham Norton show where Ewan, you know, tells that story.
Mm-hmm.
where he traces down a driver to yell at them and says he sees in their eyes them realizing that's effing Obi-Wan Kenobi. and I'm sure everybody's seen the pictures. Clearly Ewan's working on something because he got the big mustache and the kind of the hair standing up. Yeah. He looks like he is playing like a weird steampunk mad scientist who invented a hot balloon made out of iron. I don't know. Can't wait to see.
I thought he was like a 1920s villain, vaudevillian villain.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he was going to maybe sell us some special tonics.
Yes,
everything. So that was really fun. Last thing I want to talk about, just mentioned very briefly, the big climactic moment between Anakin, Vader, and Obi-Wan was played. Mm. And I had joked that if there's no news in the Obi-Wan Kenobi panel, mm-hmm. we'll just talk about Hayden and Ewan hugging, because they're gonna.
Yeah.
But that played, it's raw, everyone was into it, and it was like Hayden and Ewan couldn't let that stand, couldn't see themselves on screen.
Yeah.
Not being brothers anymore. And they both just popped up and hugged at the end of the clip, like they needed it.
Yeah.
It wasn't we're both on a panel, we came out and hugged. It was like closure of like,
yeah,
we can't leave that wound there, brother. Let's hug.
Wound. It's a wound.
That was beautiful.
It was a wonderful panel.
Yeah.
Wonderful panel.
All right, we want to keep this short. We got literally 60 seconds talk about the announcement today from Bad Batch panel. We'll talk about it more. We watched the stream in our hotel rooms in our sweatpants.
Yeah.
But the big news, season 3 is coming, and it is the final season. How do you feel?
I actually love that. I'd love Bad Batch to go 5 seasons, 10 seasons, I don't care. But I think it's important to know that, number one, it's coming back, and some fears that even you and I had of maybe this is it, is coming back. And that they know they have a chance to take the story home the way they want. That's important for creators, it's important for shows, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I'm hugely excited to not have to wait for it. It's a great rundown of the teaser trailer that was exclusive, but there's rundowns of it already public. On the StarWars.com site that you pointed out, written by Dan Brooks, that sounds like it's teeing up some great stuff. We will dive into all the details of that, a little bit later. But yeah, I love the show, so I'm thrilled that it has an ending. It makes me very excited that there might be some closure on the story of the clones. Mm-hmm. It makes me hopeful that since they're really really setting up Mount Tantus, a big cloning project that Palpatine wants, as I'm really hoping that the clones can put a stop to a part of Palpatine's machinations.
Yeah.
And to me, that would be like if there can be a big final conflict, the clones can get a win, the Bad Batch goes off and lives happily ever after on Pabu, Rex and Gregor and Wolf go off because they've won their battle.
Yes.
For now.
Yes.
That's what I'm. That's the closure that I would be really interested in. Final thought on this is for them to be showing teasers.
Yeah.
This story about cloning has been locked and loaded for a long time.
Right.
Which means to me there is a possibility of good synergy between the cloning story that Bad Batch has been telling and the cloning story that is brewing in the Mandoverse. It makes me feel like there's plenty of time for those to have been interconnected and working together.
And you use the word interconnected. That's sometimes a dangerous word in Star Wars. I like the way you're using it here, that there be purpose to it. Leave room. It's thematic first and not a plot point checklist on how we get to Exegol. But I think there's it just makes sense for Palpatine to be there, be interested, and that's part of the fun.
And Ian McDiarmid apparently back at it. That's what we got. Ken, we'll discuss all this in more detail in the years to come.
Yes, 2024 at least. So, that's it. That's our list, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's time to walk the floor for one final time. I'm gonna get one of those sandwiches I like and just spend some time. I might get a figure. It's gonna be great.
Oh yeah. If Ken doesn't buy himself one, I'm gonna.
There we go. All right. That's our celebration. I don't even say wrap up. It's just our third episode. celebration. We'll do some more details. A lot more out there. It's been great to meet you all. Great to feel your support. And those back home or wherever you are on your couch watching and posting in Discord, it's been great fun. So more on the way. If you're just kind of discovering us, you know, you might not know us. So here's where you can find us. We're on Twitter, Force Center Pod, Instagram, YouTube as well. New episode of Figure Fights coming out this week. All that kind of good stuff. Head over there. Merch available. tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. We saw, I think, Brian, one of our listeners with the Force Center Speculate Responsible shirt yesterday. Yeah. That was great. And as always, you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Got a lot of good talking in that bar last night, Joseph, after the show, that pub, of the value of our community. And yes, it does come down to help, hey, supporting the show and helping us grow and Patreon, all that kind of stuff. But to see people connect in our Discord and Andrew McNabb, Greer, Ilka, Mark stand around going, yeah, we've had a great time connecting with each other. It goes beyond Star Wars. It goes beyond Force Center. And that's the place to start that journey if you want to get into that. It's patreon.com/ForceCenter. I'm Ken Napsok. That's Joseph Scrimshaw. You know where to follow us. We got to go to the floor. We'll see you next time here in Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.